So let's talk about music. My name is Sergio Barrer, and I'm a composer and a pianist of the classical persuasion. And today I have as my guest Steve Danielson, who is a conductor and artistic director of the Ensign Choir, close to that's in Seattle, right?
Yes, it is.
And a composer. And that's why I invited him to be here. Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, I we this is the first time we meet, which is always interesting. And doing something kind of impromptu without much background. But let me ask you the first question I usually ask my guests. How did you end up becoming a composer?
Well, it wasn't something I planned on doing. I planned on being a conductor, which I did end up becoming. But as I was conducting choirs, I found myself wanting sort of something different than what I was finding in the choral repertoire. I was wanting to find pieces that really suited my choirs, that matched their strengths, really sort of would make them successful in what they were doing. And so I started writing for my choirs. It took me a long time actually before I actually called myself a composer. It took many years of actually writing music before I was like, oh yeah, I guess I actually am a composer as well. And I started trying to promote myself a little bit at that point. But yeah, it was just something I stumbled into because I enjoyed music theory, I enjoyed how music worked, and I enjoyed working with my own groups.
Right. Something that caught my attention is you wanted something that you weren't finding in the repertoire for your choirs. And what would that be? I'm just really curious.
Well, like I said, I wanted to find something that would fit their strengths. And,
I see.
I had a music library. I inherited the music library as I took the position at the high school I taught at. And I felt that it was difficult to find the things that really highlighted my choir's strengths.
I
And
see.
so, I definitely pulled things from there, and we explored a lot of different music. But to really find the things that were good for my choir, it was easiest just to write it for them and say, we've got a strong three-part mix. I'm going to do this. I've got this great text. I'm going to play around with this, or I'm going to arrange this song to fit my ensemble.
I see. You conduct several ensembles besides the Ensign Choir, I think, right?
I do, yeah. Actually, right now I'm in my classroom where I teach middle school choir at Jefferson Middle School. Go Jaguars! And I also direct two choirs with the Olympia Youth Chorus, a young women's ensemble as well as a young men's ensemble. And well, I guess that's all I do in conducting. Well, I do my church choir as well,
I see.
so I got that on Sundays.
I see. It's interesting writing music for I recently did a piece for a middle school here in LA. And I took a poem from a Spanish composer. And it's a different type of writing. You have to write for middle school.
Yeah, you've got to be more cognizant of range. What sort of rhythms are used to? I actually wrote one for my group as well, which I tried to write something that would be possible for them to be perform virtually. Something that they could learn as we were teaching over Zoom, that they would be successful with. And we created a piece, and then I was able to create harmonies to it and share it with the high school, and we did a big collaborative project all together. So it was a fun challenge.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely. It's interesting how every type of ensemble presents their own challenge,
Yeah.
and that you wrote for that you write to match the challenges for your choir. That's really interesting.
Yeah, as a teacher, I want my students to be successful. I want them to find those ways that they can find their way into the music, and find success there. So not just throw something super hard and say, okay, let's pound at this for a while, but you know, have that hard piece, have something there, but then have something that they can be successful at a little bit faster, something that's going to play to their strengths, and then use that piece as a guide into the harder repertoire, or I can write something harder for them, you know, as they progress. It's a fun, it's almost a puzzle. As one piece falls into place, you can add another piece, always looking at what's possible now.
Right. That sounds, yeah, that makes sense. I in these interviews, I usually chat, like I also give mine, my stuff and interact with you, not just as an interviewer, but as another composer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I try to make out of my podcast, you know, a little bit more. So that's why I mentioned my stuff too.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway, let's start hearing some of your music. I heard all the music you sent me. How about if we start with the Itsy Bitsy Spider? I really like that. Shall I play it? Is there any? How did this piece come about?
Well, it's interesting. So I attended Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. And when I was attending there as an undergraduate, Eric Whitaker was working with the BYU Singers to create his a cappella CD, sort of the first CD of Eric Whitaker music. Oh. And I wasn't part of the choir, but I was part of the choir that met right after them. So I was eating lunch in the foyer of the rehearsal hall. And we would see Eric Whitaker, you know, breeze in and go work with the choir. And we'd hear this beautiful music coming out of the rehearsal hall. And so I started wondering, I wonder if I could write something that sounded like Eric Whitaker. But, you know, I wasn't really a serious composer at that time. And so I decided I wanted to make something sound like Eric Whitaker, but have fun with it, with a fun poem. So I chose the Itsy Bitsy Spider and started playing around, you know, so came up with this alto ostinato, the spider climbed, the spider fell, and just sort of built everything around it, you know, elongated the melody in the sopranos and put it all in minor, of course, because why not?
Because why not?
That's yeah, so it all sort of came out as a fun experiment in what was possible with this text and sort of playing around with that Eric Whitaker-esque type sound. And, you know, you listen to it, and it doesn't have actually a whole lot of Eric Whitaker flavor to it, but it was what was in my mind that that was that right. Sound.
Okay. So I'm gonna play it for our audience, okay?
And okay.
We'll talk a little bit more about it. 1 second. Very nice.
Thanks. That was a live performance of the University of Memphis choir performing that piece. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. And tell me, do you have how would you describe your writing? Is it more arranging, or is it more, or how do you describe your writing?
You know, I think it used to be more arranging. I was doing, you know, a lot of hymns and things for my church choirs and things like that. But I find that most of my stuff recently has been more original composition, either on text that I found from poets or from text that I've written myself. So it's been a lot more original composition lately, but it started out with a lot more arrangements. My very first thing was a real simple choral arrangement of Silent Night, you know, just got to start somewhere.
Of course. No. And how do you find working your text against working a poet's text? I mean, how would you compare those two experiences?
Well, when I'm working with my own text, I'm often writing text with the intention of writing music to it. I'm not a poet that just sits down and writes. I'm more of a lyricist, where I know I want to write a song, and I know I have an idea of what I want the song to be about. And so when the text comes to me, I'm writing, and sort of the melody, the rhythm is sort of working itself out as I'm writing the poetry as well. And so I have a sort of a different sense of the text by the time I'm done writing that. Whereas with a poem from a different poet, I have to sit with it and I have to live with it and I have to get to know that poetry before the melodic ideas start to work themselves out.
I see. It takes some time to just digest the poem, and then it starts, at a certain point it starts coming out.
Yeah, you got to find, you know, what rhythm is this poem speaking? You know, how do you take this idea, just these words on a page, and create a melodic idea out of it? It's different than when I'm writing it myself and the melody and the words are happening simultaneously.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. I have done both myself. I've written to text of others and I've written to text of myself. And it's a different experience. I understand very well.
Yeah.
But what I've done sometimes, the last pieces I wrote about immigrants, I did interviews and then I took text from the interviews.
Oh, that is interesting.
And then I started to put it together and put a melody to it. And that's a different experience. I did that with an oratorio about Moses, you know, from pieces from the Bible, and then started assembling them.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit complicated when I've done with just a poem that I tried to write in something. I have to say that it has not been quite as successful for me as taking a poem of somebody else that is already a masterpiece, because sometimes I, you know, anyway, it's a totally different experience, and everybody does different with it.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it's got to be a poem that speaks to you as well. So it's not just finding any poem, but it's got to have some sort of meaning to you, and needs to have some sort of impetus of why you want to use that text in the first place.
Right. Do you get inspired by current events, or do you get inspired by concepts, like higher concepts?
You know, I have not done a whole lot with, say, social justice issues. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's fear of wading into controversy, which I'm not sure I want to deal with in my music. I don't know if it's fear or just my desire for peace. I'm not sure. I haven't dealt a lot with that. You know, I get inspired by different things.
Yeah, like what?
Well, right now I'm working on a set of pieces based on elements from the periodic table.
Okay.
And that was actually that actually was based on a podcast I listened to called Radio Lab, and they did a series on elements, and interspersed in their story, they had these poems that had been written about the elements. And so I contacted the poets that had written the poems, got permission to set them. And so they are all just so amazing, the different directions that they were looking at elements, you know, instead of just looking at a hunk of metal or a gas or whatever, they were almost personalizing it. You know, one was called "I Carried Your Oxygen," and the poet was talking about carrying his aunt's oxygen tank that she needed to breathe. And they were walking through the lobby of a restaurant together, and he was sort of reminiscing about that tender moment that he had with his aunt. And so that was the poem about oxygen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's interesting.
It's really interesting. Yeah. I've finished two of the pieces. I'm working on the third one, and hopefully we'll have it done in the next month or so.
That's great. It's yeah. And it's also amazing where one can find sources of inspiration.
I know.
You know what came to my mind when you said about the periodic table?
What's that?
Have you seen Breaking Bad? Have you seen the entry of the entrance of that?
I haven't. Show? No.
Oh, okay. Because he's a chemist, and always the Breaking Bad, they use BR on the and BA at the bottom.
Gotcha.
That's what I thought of when you said periodic table, Breaking Bad. You know, probably some people have seen that show.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go into the.
Well, if I could say one last thing about Itsy Bitsy Spider, because I'd had some exciting news about it yesterday. I just got an email that it was accepted into the Project Encore catalog. And so I'm very excited. So it's out there available for people to check out through Project Encore.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Anyway, you arranged the song that is in some African language?
In Swahili, yes.
Swahili. And what was this project about?
So when I was attending the University of Washington to get my doctorate, there was an exchange program with the American Choral Directors Association, and they brought some conductors over from Kenya, and one of them, Evans Mbinji, came to the University of Washington campus, and we met, had a great exchange. I sent him some of my music, which he really enjoyed, and so we sort of struck up this friendship, and he said, I need to bring you to Kenya. I want you to come to Kenya, and I want you to work with my choirs. We played around with the idea for a while. It didn't work out when I was actually getting my doctorate, but last year, I was sort of in between work. I was working as a substitute teacher, and so I had sort of flexibility in my schedule. And so I contacted him and said, let's make this trip actually happen. So we arranged a time for me to go over there in February of 2020, right before the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
Just
cut it close, huh?
Just cut it close. Yeah, I had barely heard anything about it before the trip. And on my way home, the people at the airport were like, have you traveled to China lately? And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then I got home and everything just sort of exploded from there.
Yes, Seattle was one of the first
ports, yeah, right? Seattle, yeah. was a hot spot, yeah. So anyway, as I was planning this trip, I was sending lots of my music to him that he was planning to do with his choir. And he said, I want you to arrange something in Swahili. I said, okay, I've never worked with Swahili before. And so he sent me this song. It's written by Ruben Kigame. That's who wrote the original melody. Mm-hmm. But he said, I want you to write an arrangement of this for my choir to do. It needs to be something that is accessible for them. Not all of them read music very well. And so it needs to be something that can be taught by rote. No divisi in the parts. And so I started playing around with this, and it turned out really, really well. The choirs in Kenya have really taken it by storm. I've had choirs all over Kenya and even into Zimbabwe performing this piece. So it's had a lot more success than I thought. In fact, I'm wearing my Kenyan shirt that Evans gave me for our interview today, just for good luck.
That's great. Let's hear the music. I'm gonna play it, okay?
All right.
Wanani mchungaji wangu, sitapungukiwa kitu. Ulaza kwenye majani mabichi, uniongoza kwa maji matulivu. Hakika wema nazo fadhili, 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 hakika wema nazo fadhili. Yangu gongo lako na fimbo yako vinanifariji mimi, kuwanda meza mbele yangu machoni pa watesi wangu. Hakika wema nazo fadhili, zitanifuata mimi, nitakaa nyumbani mwa Bwana siku zote za maisha.
That's very nice.
Yeah, Bwana ni mchungaji wangu, which means the Lord is my shepherd.
Okay, and it's that psalm?
It is, yeah, Psalm 23. That's just the psalm in Swahili.
Yeah, just what you expect to find in your next, in your neighborhood church, right?
That's right. Yeah, and in fact, this would be totally accessible for any church choir to do. It's in four-part SATB. There's no Divisi. It's quite accessible.
Yeah, I could see that. And it has a nice rhythmic. The melody has that, those thirds, those, the rhythmical structure is the same of the melody, right? You took mm-hmm. that, right?
Yeah.
It has those nice triplets there.
Yeah. And I tried to play with this interplay of the triplets versus the, you know, dotted 8/16ths underneath, right. And playing around with the different textures. You know, this is a sacred piece, and in Kenya, or at least in Nairobi, that's where I spent most of my time when I was there. There wouldn't be drums and percussion with the sacred pieces, and so this was a nice way to sort of get that rhythmic idea in there without having to actually add drums.
Nice, yeah. You can feel it's a rhythmic piece, and yet there is no percussion.
Yeah.
And you say that it has been played around.
All over Kenya. I've had probably at least 20 choirs that have contacted me saying, we want to do your piece.
So. And you said no, right?
I told them anyone in Kenya that wants to do it gets to do it for free. I'm not charging them anything. So.
That's great. That's congratulations. It's a very nice work. We have another one here. Take me back. And then in in parentheses, a new American folk song. So what's that about, the new American? I mean, what do you call that?
Sure. So I wrote this back in 2015. Mm-hmm. I was teaching high school choir in Tennessee, and I was taking my students up to New York. And I knew that one of our first performances was going to be on the 80th story of the Empire State Building. We were going to be in sort of the lobby there, and there's going to be a little setup. And so I said, I want something special, something that's going to sort of hook everyone's attention, say, this is sort of our piece for this trip. And so I started thinking, you know, sort of Americana type feel. And I wanted the feel of a traditional American folk song, like, you know, Buy All Them Cabbage Down or Skipped My Lou or something in that vein. And so I started writing about take me back to that time when people sang together, when folk music was a thing. You know, we don't experience folk music in the way that folk music used to be. People don't gather in other people's homes and just sing for the sake of singing. There has to be a reason.
You're not talking about the folk song movement of the 60s. You're talking about...
I'm talking about ancient folk songs, oral tradition. Yeah. The traditional passed down orally from person to person. And so I wanted to write something that was not only A, in that style, but B, sort of evoked the essence of that style. And so I came up with this Take Me Back. And I called it a new American folk song, really because I was American and writing it in that style. But really, I want it to be a folk song for the world, something that sort of speaks to everyone. I think that one of the ways that we learn about moving forward is by looking back. We look back at what has already happened and take those lessons to help us move forward. So I'm big into that sort of folk music. In fact, that's what I did my dissertation on, was a folk song collection. And I wanted this piece to sort of reflect that.
I see. All right. Let's hear it after the commercial posting.
out, obviously, was not my high school choir. That was the Ensign Symphony and Chorus up in Seattle. When I got that position, that was one of the first things I wanted to do was to orchestrate something. I'd never orchestrated anything that had been played. I had one or two pieces that I played around with orchestration, but this is my first orchestration that was performed live, cool. which I was really excited about.
When did you become the conductor of the Ensign Symphony and Choir?
In the fall of 2018, right at the beginning of their sixth season, their principal conductor stepped down and I took the reins. So,
great.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year trying to keep the organization going.
The understatement of the year, I'm sure.
Yeah, but yeah. I'm actually excited. We're doing a live performance this coming Saturday on the 19th of June. Really excited. We are. We're doing a live performance. Unmasked and everything.
Great. Congratulations. Yeah. A lot of people around there have been vaccinated too, right? In the
Seattle. Seattle is over 70%. In fact, I think Seattle is the highest vaccination rate in the nation right now. So they were the first to get it and the leaders in the vaccination.
Yeah, LA is getting there. We're also getting there. We're in the 60%, I think.
Yeah.
60-something percent. Yeah, I'm looking forward to having... So how does it work? You conduct both the symphony and the choir, or they have a symphonic conductor, or you are doing both things?
Well, I'm the principal conductor. So
I see.
Most of our concerts are chorus and orchestra pieces.
I see.
And so I'm conducting the majority of the concert. We do have some orchestra-only pieces, uh-huh. And we do have a separate symphony conductor who does those, and that's more of his specialty.
I see.
And so he takes care of those, and I basically do the rest of the concert. Most of my time is spent with the chorus, preparing them for the concert, and then a couple of weeks before the concert, we get together with the orchestra and set tempos and work through the pieces and things like that.
That's great. And how do you like conducting both a symphony and a choir?
Oh, it's amazing. It never gets old. You know, we perform in Benaroya Hall, which is sort of the premier venue in Seattle. And it is such an amazing place to perform, and having an orchestra and a chorus and just the amount of sound they can produce is just exciting. You know, just having that wash over you sometimes. I just sit up there and just think, I have a fantastic position here.
Yeah, no, I started working with the San Fernando Valley Master Chorale here in LA in 2015 as their composer in residence.
Mm-hmm.
And the conductor was, you know, the thing that he looked forward the most was conducting choir with orchestra. He didn't want to do any a cappella stuff. He didn't want to do a couple of instruments. He said, write to me something for an orchestra and a choir, and I'd love you. it has to be a great experience. I've never done it, but it has to be great.
Well, even just writing for orchestra, you know, it's something I've gotten into recently since I've been working with the Ensign Orchestra. You know, it's a different way of thinking than I had to think about choirs. You know, I've been writing for choirs for, you know, almost 20 years. And so figuring out how to best write for instruments is something I've been playing around with a lot more lately. And it's been a fun journey.
Right. Just as a last note, you also have a podcast, right?
I do. I have a podcast very similar to yours. Uh-huh. It's called Movable Dough. Coming from the Movable Dough system of sight singing. And I interview composers and talk about their lives and their works. Very similar to what you're doing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I do have to, where do you, you can hear it and where?
Oh, anywhere you can find podcasts, you know, Google Podcasts, Apple, Spotify, CastBox, just wherever you can find good podcasts.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with me.
And
for
it was my pleasure.
Some of your experiences and some of your music. And Yeah, I hope that we can keep in touch.
Me too.
And I have friends in Seattle that are in choral music too, but I don't think you know them. There must be a few choirs in Seattle.
There are a couple. Yeah. Yeah, I'm all trying right. to try